हरिः सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 31, chapter 85. Okay. In the Sanskrit grammar taught by the sage Panini, the verb expressing action is taken to be the essential core of the sentence, and all other words function in relation to it. Nouns, for example, are put into any of several cases to show their particular relationship to the verb in a sentence, right? Because we said the verb is the core, the nouns then center around that to give their different cases show which part they're playing in that action itself, right? So then, these relationships of a noun to a verb are called karakas, namely a relationship of a subject. Relationships of subject, karta, who does. So the subject then is who's performing the action, right? And then object, karma, means it's actually who is done towards, like that, because the verb is the karma. See, the whole point is when you understand the noun in relationship to the verb, then it makes more sense, right? So who's performing the action, so it's directed at someone. Who is directed at, that's the object, right? Then those who assist in it, in that action, that's the instrument, right? Because they're assisting in the performance of the activity. That is, you know, the relationship or interaction between the subject and the object. Right? Does that make sense? Like person A is performing an activity towards person B. Okay? Now you have person C is assisting in that interaction. They're the instrument. Does that make sense? Or let us say, that doesn't make much sense, then you have, you're cooking your sabji, all right? So cooking is the verb. So you're performing the activity of cooking. And it's directed at who's getting cooked, right? The vegetables. So, but what's assisting in that, right? The spoon is assisting, the pot is assisting, all these things are assisting. They're the instruments through which cooking goes on. Yes.
Rajiv was saying, you are cooking in the pot. Who is the instrument, the pot?
No, because it's just...
just an example of something.
That one... I think... yeah, but nothing's being accomplished in this. You're just stating the existence of what's going on.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is that you're not... because you don't see what you're trying to do and accomplish, and that's what then other sentences will bring out. But if you're cooking in the pot, that's still, the pot is still an instrument. But who the cooking is at, what you're cooking, or who you're cooking for, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Then that, you always have that dynamic that it's going to be between one entity and another. If you're only just describing their existence or how they're situated, then that's also a verb, but it's static, it's not dynamic.
But if we say we are cooking for Krishna in the pot,
Then the pot becomes an instrument. Recipient, sampradana, towards which, that's the object. Right? Then you're going to get your result, like that. Then the source, apadana, or form from which, and the location, adhikarana, from which. Means you're going to be cooking in a particular situation, there's going to be a reason that you're cooking. Right, it's time for the offering, or you're hungry, or something like that. There's a result from that, that's the dative. You understand? Does that make sense? So you're going to have the verb. Then you're going to have the subject and object. They're the actual what's going on. Then the instrumental is helping in that. You'll get a result from that interaction, that's the dative. But it's about interacting between the subject and object. It's not specifically about the result gain. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, the friends go to dinner, right? So the result of that is they'll have eaten. But is it about going to eat? It's about the interaction. You understand? That's the interesting point in the grammar, is that the dative, or the result, is actually a separate entity from the interaction between the two parties that generate the result. That's why when we say we do an activity to get a result, but we say result for Krishna. The result's not the result. For Krishna is the result. You understand?
Yes.
It's the goal of the goal. I do an activity which is secondary. It produces a result which is also secondary. That result then being offered to Krishna, now it becomes primary. Does that make sense? Even though we'll say it's the goal, yes, it's the goal within primary, means it's a goal within primary that is an instrument for pleasing Krishna. So our result is only an instrument to express our devotion. So was the first class more difficult or this one?
We don't know now.
So can we say, just to clarify the terminology?
See, because in here what's being used, this is from Panini, we use it a little differently.
Yeah,
so I'm explaining ours, I'm explaining Narayan's grammar. Because in here, how they're using sampradana for, towards which, that's the object. Because there's slight different ways how you can use these things. That's why there's 8 different grammars in Sanskrit.
Yeah.
So of that, Narayan's the top. Panini is the most popular and most well known, but our Jiva Goswami picked Narayan's grammar. And so we see according to that. Because Panini is coming from Shiva, so it can be used in a variety of ways. So it can be very nicely used in the secondary. But Narayan's grammar is specific for using in the primary. Because you can get the same thing done, but it's just that there may be slight flavor differences. So they're like dialects, you could say.
Yeah.
It's the same language, but kind of how they use the words, how they put them together is slightly different. Like let's say the same country, but people up in the mountains, they kind of put things together different than people are down in the plains, or people on the ocean side will be different, people in the big cities will be different, people in the countryside is different. They kind of put their words together differently. So it's basically the same thing, but you'll get this variety of difference. So sometimes you may see there's a difference between what we explain as grammar and what Panini says.
So then Rupa Goswami, he explains Ashray and Vishay.
Yes.
So according to this terminology, can we say that Vishay being Krishna is
the subject?
He's an object.
No, he's in that way, he's the subject.
Then I'm confused.
See, he's the ultimate object of everything. Everything's about him. Means as an ultimate goal. But now when you're talking about interacting, then he's the enjoyer. And then there's the enjoy. So he's the one that is the activity, is he's performing the activity directed at a devotee based on their affection for him. So the devotee's ultimate goal is pleasing Krishna. So he's that, in that way, the supreme object. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But in when you're applying it, he's the subject and the devotee's the object. Because it's like this, he's rasa. Right? But when Krishna interacts with Mother Jashoda, it will be different than when he interacts with the cowherd boys or the gopis. But the principle of prema is the same all the around. So as far as prema goes, he's the object. But when we're applying it in pastimes, he's the subject. Because it's about him fulfilling his desires. So we take part as an instrument in that. So in that, Krishna's interaction with Mother Jashoda, Krishna's interaction with the cowherd boys, with the gopis, that's subject-object. We, as servants of the servants of the servants, we're instruments. So we take part in that. Like Mother Jashoda in the morning cooks for Krishna. But you see, the gopis will come to take part in that. But it's Mother Jashoda's arrangement. So she is the Yajaman. She's the one who's arranging it. So she's arranging breakfast for Krishna. But the gopis are coming in as instruments and they're cooking. Does that make sense? So the rasa can be explained through the grammar. And many times you see is that they use it. It doesn't come out as much in English because English, you know, not having a... having a mother but no specific father, you know, so because of that particular cultural background, then the grammatical is not the foundation of usage of English. Well, most of the language, the grammar is very important. So you could explain things grammatically through most all other languages very comfortably. But we see is that generally the translators from the commentaries of the Acharyas, they don't take the grammatical explanations because in English no one would know what it means. You know, if you went to Harvard or Yale or Oxford, yeah, you might know, but you still wouldn't be accustomed to using that as an example. You would just say, oh, that's not grammatically correct, but to use it as an example, you'd use grammar as an example. You're like, we're using cooking as an example. So much of the time in the purports, grammar is used as the example. Because it's fixed. It's you know what's going on. So it's very easy to say what's what. Does that make sense? So when we say the Icha Shakti, it means it's coming from Krishna's desire. So that's where it's coming from. Like you see, the full moon night of the Sharat season, right? Which I think is the next moon coming up, or it's the one after that. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but whatever it is, there's going to be the Ras Purnima moon.
Ras Purnima is one after.
Yeah, okay, the end of Kartik one.
Right.
So when that moon comes up, then Krishna thinks this is a perfect night for a dance. So that's the desire, that's where it's coming from. He wants to dance. So now he is the subject, will play the flute, you know, directed at the gopis as the object. Now the flute is the instrument. Right? That will call them. Now from that, your result, your data will be the gopis have come there to where Krishna is. That's the result of that interaction. Mm-hmm. You understand? So that's the first part. That's the Sambandha part. That's the Madan Mohan part. Mm-hmm. Right? Then they're going to interact. Then there'll be the rasa dance. Krishna interacting with the gopis, and then you'll see the other gopis who are playing the instruments and singing and all that. They're the instruments. And then Krishna's interacting with the gopis. Right? Does that make sense? The result is they danced. But it's the interaction. That dynamic between the subject and object based or centered on the verb, that's actually the main point. All the other nouns are supportive of that. The subject and object and the verb, their interaction. Then instrumental is supporting that, and the other ones are, you know, the result gained from that, the cause behind that. You know, does that make sense? And what is it? Cause behind that, and if they're... what's the last one? What is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's another one.
Wait, just a second, please.
Sorry?
The place also is required.
Oh, and the place, yes. The place. So then, you know, in this case, then at the Jamuna is the place, Vamsivat. You know what I'm saying? So then the first dative is Krishna's at Vamsivat, the gopis are not. So by his playing the flute towards them, then they get inspired, they come to the place where Krishna is. Now the situation is set. Now that Madan Mohan aspect is done. Now as Govinda, now they can interact with the Rasa dance. Right? And then it changed. Then the maid servants and that, they play all the instruments, they sing the songs, they set the place up. Right? Then the gopis and Krishna interact. Right? Does that make sense? So the experience of that is what Krishna wants. That's the cause of it. I think that's called the ablative. No, that's the fusible? Ablative? I don't know. One of those. Right? So then, that will then conclude that when they finish that. Now when they go to take rest, now you're dealing with Gopinath. Right? Because now it's just appreciating that the rasa between them and all that, and then they'll sit, they'll run really like this. Okay. But within each one of them, you have all three. Mm-hmm. Because within the cause, within the effect, is always the cause. So even Madan Mohan, you'll have all three aspects. Mm-hmm. Krishna playing the flute, you know, will be the Madan Mohan of Madan Mohan, and then them come to Krishna, that will be the Govinda of Madan Mohan, and then they're reaching there and meeting Krishna there, that would be the Gopinath of Madan Mohan. We're good?
Yeah. Just back to the terminology.
Yes.
In Sanskrit, it sounds like Ishai and Ashrai, it's always fixed and it's kind of easier.
Yeah, it is. Because when you're dealing there, but it's not that we're not going to use Krishna as the ultimate goal, because then we're looking at that as like your Icha, Kriya, and Dhyana. We're looking at it from that. When you're looking at it from rasa itself being exchanged, then you're going to look at it as ashray and vishay. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like that. So the vibhav is that central point within rasa. Means the staibhav is going to be, means you can say, of course, that the staibhav is what you're going to be fixed in. Right? But that's expressed how it, the dynamic, that's static, but it becomes dynamic because of the vibhava, right? So the alambana and then the what is it? Alambana and udipana. So vishaya, ashraya, that's the alambana. And then the udipana, that's then within that what Krishna's doing, what the situations are, what are, you know, opportunities for interaction, right? And that will give then the anubhava, which will be an experience, right? And so then, yeah, and then special experience, that will be the sattvic abhavas. Because that means is then when the life airs get involved, they create that. Because sometimes you see what's described in anubhava and sattvic abhava are the same. Mm-hmm. But one's created by the mind, the other's created by the prana. Does that make sense? The mind and the prana then creates that one. While the other one is just the effect of that mood. And the sancharis, then those are assistants to the transitory. They're just coming up and going down. They assist these others. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's I'm not sure that it's not an assistant to the vibhava. Like that. I'll have to look it up. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the breakdown of what's serving what. And so they each have their place and what's doing, what's serving each other and all that. So yes, that's why then it probably says that complete science. It's a science, so you know what's going on. But when we're talking about the tattva, then you'll say Krishna is the ultimate goal. When we're talking about actual interaction and the dynamic thing, then you're going to talk in these other aspects. That's why sometimes you see it talking about Krishna as the object, and another place it says, you know, he's the subject and Radharani's it. So he's the supreme subject. He's the supreme Vishaya, and she's the supreme object. But it's not that, let's say, in an activity that one is not taking that role of the subject with Krishna as the object. Does that make sense? You know.
It becomes even more confusing when it's translated from English into Russian because it has a little, you know, slightly different meaning. And then that presentation is very, very confusing, and then people get completely bewildered.
But don't people want to get bewildered? Because then it leaves rise to speculation and coming up and, you know, singing baby, 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 oh, and all that kind of stuff. right?
Yeah.
So someone who knew Sanskrit and then knew Russia and knew English and then could translate from English into Russian probably wouldn't have that problem. But unless they knew the philosophy, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I guess if they know the philosophy nicely, they'll figure it out. Because it's always a problem because, as we said, English isn't really a... You use a shoehorn to apply grammar onto English. You know, in some cases, a crowbar or a sledgehammer, like that. But other languages start from the grammar and they come out from there, so it's much more natural. What to do?
Yeah, therefore, we see in the Western world, the English country, they don't produce many philosophers. Can't think very clearly on
it. No, it means they don't maybe that technical, but the speculation is very good in English. Because, you know, you're not restricted by grammar. Or restricted by anything. You can use words however you like, do anything you want and all that. Just you make words up. Just do whatever you want. While other languages somehow or another they don't appreciate that. You know, it's like we do the things, then we edit it and then everybody's happy. But, you know, it's like we're doing in Russian. You take an English part into Russian, then you edit it, then you have to re-edit it, then you have to bring in some scholar to edit it, and then you have to bring in, you know, the prime minister's right-hand man, who's the scholar for the country. He edits it. And now pretty much people will be okay with it. You know, because the grammar is such. Well, in English, it's just as long as it doesn't annoy you, then you're good. Because you can say it in many, many ways. These people just don't care. Okay. Apart from these karakas, nouns may also sometimes point to other nouns in a possessive sense, right? Because then there's secondary nouns. There's primary nouns, which are these ones that we describe, right? Who's performing the activity towards who, right? You know, what's the reason, what's the result gained, what's the reason behind that, and what's the place that we're doing it in, and that's then there's the verb itself. Right? But then these are direct. So these are primary nouns. You have secondary nouns like possessive and these other aspects that are there. And things that support. Like you want to give expand the definition on the subject or expand it on the object or on these other things. Like the man does this. The nice man does this. Right? So all these kind of expansions, these are also nouns. But they're assistants to the primary now, so they're secondary, right? Like that. And there are also various kinds of adverbs of time and place and manner, right? They're just secondary nouns. They don't get into adverbs, adjectives, these kind of things like that. They're just all different varieties of nouns. So in that way, Sanskrit's very straightforward. But although language thus seems to indicate the activity of many separate agents in the manifest creation, the deeper truth is that all grammatical forms refer first of all to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? Because he's the subject in this. He's the one. So when they're saying the creation, who's created? Krishna. Right? Mm-hmm. In this verse, Vasudeva makes a point by glorifying his two exalted sons in terms of different grammatical forms. Vasudeva continued, O Transcendental Lord, from yourself you created this entire variegated universe, and then you entered within it in your personal form as the Supersoul. In this way, O unborn Supersoul. Now here we see the, he's created the universe, then he's entered into it. How can you enter? You create it means you have to be beyond it, but then he's entered it. This is what I mean by the opposite. In your personal form as the Supersoul. In this way, O unborn Supreme Soul, as the life force and consciousness of everyone, you maintain the creation. Right? So he's created it, he's entered into it, he's maintaining it, right? He's inside, he's out. Whatever potencies the life, air, and other elements of universal creation exhibit are actually all personal energies of the Supreme Lord. Right? So even though on this impersonal feature, he's expanded everything and created everything, still, they all are actually his personal energies. That's why in anything you can still find a person, because they're his personal energies. For both life and matter are subordinate to him, and dependent upon him, and also different from one another. Thus everything active in the material world is set into motion by the Supreme Lord. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. But the prana and jiva are well known as the maintainers of the universe, not me. This verse answers that. Prana, because Krishna will see as what he's playing a role with the devotee who is in a relationship with him other than servitorship and on reverence. Right? He'll tend, it means if someone's in that mood of service and reverence, he offers all these prayers, these kind of prayers like this. He generally will take them as they are. Right? And then reciprocate based on that. Right? So you know it's time to stop wearing cargo shorts when our labors are wearing cargo shorts. We know that the fashion has made run its full course. Just in case anybody's still too attached to it. When that happens, you know it's time to move on. Or try wearing a gumshoe around your waist when you're wearing your cargo shorts. Okay, you see, like that is there, because then he is God, he's reciprocating with the devotee, and like this. But now when he's dealing with a devotee who's in a rasa above that, right, then you will generally see he tends to take them and apply them, you know, the philosophy as it applies to the jiva. Right? And leave himself out of that. So he doesn't take the position of the Lord. Because we see here Vasudeva is taking that position that Krishna is God now. Because of all the great activities he did. So Krishna is just trying to step out of that so that it brings it back around to his son. Does that make sense? Does it make sense?
It's the same happens to Devahuti in the third canto.
Yes.
That it constantly shifts from Vatsalya towards the majesty.
Yes.
And then back.
That's the whole. But that's the whole point. Is it's rasa, it's flavor. Because rasa means it's just like sanctuary bhavas. Are they permanent? No, they're constantly adjusting and changing. So within one mood, you can have so many sub moods. No. No?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's what's happening, is that these different flavors within the one mood is then adjusting and changing. You're either using different aspects of who's applying what to who. You know, subject and object are adjusting there, that's dynamic. Or the Udipan, what's causing the interest. You know, they'll say it's over this and they'll bring up something else. You know, or it's within that flavor, it keeps changing. You know, it's just like, let's say the child's done something, so let's say the parent is upset, but at the same time, then seeing the child, then they have that kind of compassion, then they have, you know, moods keep just changing. But there's still that point of you're dealing with something's gone wrong here. So that's all you're dealing with. You know, so we said, no, it should all be like that. That's the science of it. Yes, the science of it is like that. You explain it in that way. But when it becomes applied according to the mood of what's happening at the moment with the devotees. So when Krishna is the center, that constant changing adjustment of flavor is perfect. But on the material platform, then that just is what, you know, it gives it both simultaneously, gives you the taste and drives you nuts. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, that's just how it works. Okay. So this verse answers that. Prana and other ayas is mentioned because prana consists of many subcategories. So not only are prana and jiva famous as the maintainers of the universe, but they are also famous as the creators. But their energy is from the Supreme Lord because they are dependent in nature. Just as the arrows power to pierce an object is actually the power of the person firing the arrow. Right? Because the jivas, that they're the cause of the universe, is simply because Krishna maintains all living entities. And so when you have living entities that want to be maintained outside of Krishna's standard creation, then you have to have a creation for that. And so therefore then they are the cause of the creation. But actually it's Krishna wanting to take care of these living entities is actually the cause. It actually goes back to him as the Icha. Mm-hmm. So Krishna interacts with the desire of the individual living entity. Mm-hmm. Now if that's devotional, then it happens on the platform of spiritual rasa. If it's material, then it happens within the context of the material world. Right? So he creates a material world so that context of interacting between them can go on. Does that make sense? And so then, depending upon what taste the living entity wants at a particular time, they perform activities that then generate their particular situations. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? You like eating, you deal with eating the whole process according to the rules and in a pious way, then, you know, it increases your opportunities for eating. Mm-hmm. You deal with eating in an impious way, improperly, then your opportunities for eating get less. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so in this way you can say the living entity is the cause and maintainer of the universe. But ultimately behind that it's Krishna's desire. So depending upon which aspect you want to look at, you can bring these out. And they're both correct. But it's always these smaller ones, anything to do with the jiva, is when it applies to the jiva, then it's there. When it doesn't apply to the jiva, that's when it's applied to the Lord. That's what we saw in Vedanta Sutra. Mm-hmm. Right? And sometimes the definition can go both for the Lord and the jiva, but you see the context. And so if the context is talking about the supremacy, then it's not talking about the jiva, it's talking about the Lord. If it's just talking generic, then it's about the jiva. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So these contexts will keep changing and adjusting. And so that's why then we learn to refine this so we know what's going on. That's the meaning of appreciation, the rasa. Right? Pibhata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam. So all the different rasas and flavors are there. It's just a matter of appreciating it so we get. So in the beginning, then it's so many words that we're learning what those words mean. Then those words have a particular philosophical context, so we apply them in that context. Right? Then, but it comes to the point, then it comes into a application, then it comes into that results and that taste. So it's just a natural progress. So the Bhagavatam being complete in itself, all that you can get from the Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavatam is for all devotees. All devotees can appreciate, but the person who's come to the point of taste, they're going to get the best appreciation from it. Because they appreciate the dynamics that's going on between Krishna and the devotees. That's the point that they're appreciating, the rasa that's going on. And the technical points just are naturally there, because if you're going to catch the rasa, the technical points are easy. If you don't catch the rasa, the technical points are actually difficult. Does that make sense? It's like, let's say, you're going to have a program for somebody. You don't know that somebody. So for you, it's a huge list of things to get done. Right? And so that's the whole thing, and that's to go get that done. But now let's say someone who this is a close friend, that list is actually not so great. Because it's just something, these are all the things you want to get done for them. The other thing is just something you have to do. So when you have to do, then it's harder. But when you want to do it, then it's much easier. You understand? So for those who come to that point of appreciating the rasa, then even all this philosophy and that, you can see within it, it has all these different tastes and all that, of the mood, what Vasudeva's in, what mood Krishna's in, how they're reciprocating and all that. We just go, oh, another set of prayers. Okay, no, we'll get through this. And then we'll get back to the pastimes. Yeah. So that's the thing, is that the rasiks, they see rasa everywhere. Because that's all there is. It's Krishna interacting with his creation. So you do have the technical, yes. The technical is to understand who's doing what. It's not us, it's Krishna. It's not about us, it's about Krishna. Is that what you're saying? It's like we were saying before. If Krishna is the baby, then Why is a baby a baby? What does the baby require? It requires a parent.
Yes.
Right? So it's not about my baby. It's about Krishna's a baby, and that's an opportunity for those with that rasa to, you understand? It switches it. So so the tattva will put everything in the proper place. But it's actually the rasa is what one's trying to get to. But as the heart becomes purified, the material rasa, then spiritual rasa can take root. Otherwise, as long as material rasa is there, then that will take the prominence. Right? Is that what you're saying? But the prana and jiva depend upon their presiding deities. So why should one conclude that they are dependent upon the Lord? Right? So Krishna is saying that, you know, why is it dependent upon the Lord? So, you know, you say about me, because he's trying to point out, you know, what's it got to do with me? Then certainly there's similarity of the presiding deities with prana and jiva. As the prana and jiva, action and knowledge gathering senses, are material, so the presiding deities are also material. Therefore, all these energies are under the Supreme Lord, right? So then, yes, it's there in the presiding deity and all that, but it's all under Krishna. Because he is composed of consciousness. The prana and jiva, as well as the presiding deities, are material, and dull matter is known to be dependent on consciousness. Right, so here when we say the jiva means the particular form, the conditioned form that the jiva takes, the gross and subtle bodies. Right, because in this context we're not talking about the jiva meaning the soul, we're talking about the jiva meaning the gross and subtle body that the living entity is functioning in. And so Krishna is the supreme consciousness, then matter depends on consciousness. Right? So then matter depends on the consciousness of the jiva, and the jiva's consciousness depends upon Krishna. Because we can't make everything work. We are only conscious of the workings that can go on. Is that what you're saying? Yeah? But if prana and jiva do not have any power of their own, then how is it that they produce action? The action is just the movement of prana and buddhi. The movement of the action and knowledge senses, but does not indicate that they have inherent power. Just as the arrow moves not by its own power, but by the power of the bowman. Right? Because you're saying no, but how can you say that the prana and the jiva are not doing things because so much is going on? But that's because it comes from before that. Just like the arrow is moving. But why? Because of the bow.
Yes.
Why is the bow moving? Because of the bow man.
Yes.
Bow person. Excuse me. Now, what happens if someone sees themselves more in a, I'm not sure what the term is, but the more of an animal kind of identity? Is that pan, something, or whatever it is, but so then we should say bow entity. That way then it can accommodate all. As long as that entity they have has fingers that they can operate the bow.
They figured it out. They put a plus over there. LGBTQ plus. That plus is that.
Oh, okay. So that's, otherwise they just keep, yeah. you'd have the full alphabet afterwards.
So that's why
they just put plus.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Where?
Okay.
Plus.
Was it LBGT?
LGBTQ plus.
Oh, they did leave the Q. Okay.
I thought they were going to drop that and then put the plus.
Very esoteric subject. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out that in the following five verses, Vasudeva explains how Krishna is all objects and their essential qualities. So we saw that Krishna is trying to establish that he's not the supreme, he's just the son. And Vasudeva is trying to explain, no, he's the supreme Lord. So that's what the discussion there. Krishna, so you see, he does this in so many relationships. So they say things about him, no, but I'm just a cowherd boy, you know, like this. So Vasudeva explains how Krishna is all objects and their essential qualities. Vasudeva continued. Okay, in the following five. Vasudeva continued. The glow of the moon, the brilliance of fire, the radiance of the sun, the twinkling of the stars, the flash of lightning, the permanence of the mountains, and the aroma and sustaining power of the earth. All these are actually you. Right? So it's like in the, you know, the those chapters in the Gita where the universal forms.
Seventh and ninth. Okay.
And the 11th, what's that doing?
Eighth.
Also. Because one of them's on energies and one of them's on something else. I don't remember which one's which. My Lord, you are water. You are also its taste. And its capacities to quench thirst and sustain life. So it's not just these. Why you say the taste of water? That's the monus, because when you're thirsty, then that's what you're looking for. But in doing so, it quenches the thirst, it sustains life, right? You know, water has its nature. So he's all that, whatever is there. You exhibit your potencies through the manifestations of the air as bodily warmth, vitality, mental power, physical strength, endeavor, and movement. Right? Yeah, so the air does all these different things. So if the life airs are balanced, then the body stays warm, otherwise you get hot, cold, all these different things, and generally at the wrong time, you know, like that. Like vitality, you know, that drive, that mental power where you feel enthusiastic. Because when you move, let's say you move your arm, what's happening is the air is pushing on fire. Right? The nerves are fire. And then the fire pushes on the earth, which is the muscle. Does that make sense? That's what's happening. So because the mind is there, you want to do that, that means then the life airs move. Because they move, the fire moves. The fire moves, the earth moves. The earth moves, your hand moves. So that's actually what's happening. Because the life airs are moving, the prana is actually moving. So if the airs are out of balance, then the movement also doesn't work properly. Physical strength, you know, because that's the effect, endeavor and movement, all that's coming from that, the movement of the life airs. And they're there, so therefore the vitality, the mental power is there. You know, so all these things, that's all going on with the life airs. You are the directions and their accommodating capacity. Right? You have the directions, but the direction can hold everything. So that's the whole thing. So that's the whole point, is that's a potency. This is a major problem with our, you know, if we talk about all the energy coming from one spot and then expanding into unlimited. Where's the potency for a small thing to expand? Right? You have to have the capacity. So that means then within that, you know, how you say, condensed thing has to have the potency for unlimited expansion. And that potency has to expand first. Maybe that's why it's a big bang, because, you know, the different energies are all trying to get out first, like this and that, but until the expansion one goes, and when the expansion one goes, then there's a bang, because now they can all come out. You understand? Because they're just taking that space, because well, that space is an element. They're just taking it that it exists, but that's the whole thing. Where does it exist from? Okay. You are the directions that are accommodating potency, capacity, the all-pervading ether, and elemental sound residing within it. Right? So sound resides within ether. Because unless there's the space, then sound can't actually expand. Because you see, sound expands. Why? Because ether is expansive. Does that make sense? Earth does something in one place, it stays there. Right? That's what you want. Like, let's say you have, you know, we have this rock as a paperweight. We want it to stay in one place. Now, if it expands like ether, you know, then it's not going to hold the page down anymore. So we depend upon, you know. You are the primeval, unmanifested form of sound. The first syllable, om, and audible speech, right? Because that's what it is. You have the nod, which is there. Then that first sound within that is om. And then from om, then you get all the other, you know, words. Right? And that turns into audible speech. But that's how it progresses. Does that make sense? By which sound, as words, acquire particular references. Right? Because they all have to have. So why does the word even have the potency, right, to describe something? Because Krishna is that. And he's the word. Right? Does that make sense? So, a word can describe something because the something that is being described is Krishna and the word is Krishna. So there has to be a potency that's there. Otherwise, what does it matter?
You studied this in Vedanta Sutra.
Yes, yes. Okay. The BBT purport states, in accordance with the general process of creation, speech always becomes audible in stages, which proceed from subtle inner impulse to outer expression. These stages are mentioned in the mantras of the Rig Veda, 1, 164, 45. Chatvari Vakpari Mita Padani Tani Vitur Brahmana Ye Manishinaha Guhayam Trini Nihitani Nen Vayanti Turitam Vacho Manushya Varanti. Discriminating Brahmins know of four progressive stages of language. Three of these remain hidden within the heart as imperceptible vibrations, while the fourth stage is what people ordinarily understand as speech. Right? So those three, as we mentioned, is the nod itself, then the concept of what it is you want to do, the verb, and then the nouns that can perform it. Does that make sense? We mentioned that before. These stages it goes through as it rises up through the chakras, the sound. Right? So then, we know it as speech, but it originates in this other aspect. Vasudeva continued, you are the power of the senses to reveal their objects. The senses, presiding demigods, and the sanction these demigods give for sensory activity. Right? The power of the senses, presiding demigod, the sanction of that, the potency that's there, he's everything. In other words, if it exists, it's Krishna. If it works, it's Krishna. It gives a result, it's Krishna. The experience is Krishna. So Krishna is everything. Right? So the whole I Krishna consciousness means using all these to please Krishna. Right? Then you're interacting with Krishna, because otherwise you're just interacting with your own mind, your own desire. That makes sense? So all situations are for Krishna. All things being operated in a way, and that potency that makes them work, that's Krishna. That they can generate a particular result from that operation with those ingredients in those situations, that's Krishna. And the result of that being to please Krishna, that's what makes it Krishna conscious. Because Krishna is all those things anyway, even if you're not Krishna conscious. You're a total, you know, materialist. It doesn't matter. Still, Krishna is the situation, the elements within that, the interaction of that, the knowledge of that, the results gained, the experience gained. It's still Krishna. But because you don't attribute it to Krishna, you're not doing it to please Krishna, you get no devotional benefit. Right? If you know it's Krishna, but it's not for Krishna, you get pious benefit. You're a pious person. You recognize that this is how it's doing. Vishnu is everything, he makes it work. But you're not doing it as devotion to him, you're just recognizing his position. That's just considered, that's the best of piety. I follow the Shastra, that's pious. I do it knowing that it's under the authority of Vishnu, that's the top piety. You know, that's how you become Lord Brahma and stuff like that. Because Brahma knows that it's Vishnu who's all this. Now, if he's doing that to please Krishna, that makes him a devotee.
And like, you say, like, piety is Krishna. Then the question comes, what, everything is Krishna. Then you ask, like, what is then impiety?
What is impiety? Not using things in their natural according to the natural laws attributed to them.
Like how it is related to this Krishna is everything.
Krishna is everything, but the point is Krishna a person or not?
Yes.
So being a person, are there things that he likes and things that he doesn't?
Yes.
Okay. So things that he likes, that's called pious. Things that he doesn't like, that's called impious. Right? So that's why we don't speculate. We don't know what God wants. That's why we study the scriptures and hear from the acharyas. Because then we know what Krishna likes and what he doesn't like.
And how we can say that which is not liked by Krishna is also Krishna?
Because where will the potency come from anyway if it's not Krishna? How is it not working? It's still not working according to Krishna's laws. Like means, like if you have like a nice vase, okay? Vase? a pot made out of glass that's a little bit fancy that your mother and grandmother seem to like to stick flowers in, and you have no idea why. Right? Okay. So we take that vase, okay? Right. And so the vase now, if you deal according to its nature as a vase, then you have to handle it very carefully. You know, generally always using two hands, being careful how you pick it up, put it down, everything like that, right? You know, if it's full, not full, all these things, where you're putting it. Oh, you have to consider all these things. Then that vase that your grandmother had goes down to your mother and then gets handed down to you. Right? Okay? Now, if you don't follow these rules, then the vase then somehow or another, due to the also Krishna's potency of gravity, then heads in a southerly direction. Okay? And according to the general uses of language by the public, when we say something's going south, then what does that mean? Is it good or bad?
Bad,
yes. So it's going south, right? So then it goes down and it hits the ground. So unless your whole house is made out of Dunlop pillows, then you have a problem. Okay? So now it will hit the floor and it will shatter into pieces. Okay? Now the potency of that being able to shatter into pieces, that's the nature of glass and how it works, and so that's also Krishna. So as Krishna is always functioning, it's just what you want. If you want things that are functioning nicely in rasa, then that works. But now according to the kid, it's fun to throw things off and watch them break. And after they broke and shattered to pieces, then they hand it back to the parent and say, fix it. Let's do it again. They don't quite know the rules. Okay. No? Yes, okay. Vasudeva continue. Okay. Presiding demigod. And the sanction the demigods give for sensory activity. You are the capacity of the intelligence for decision making and the living being's ability to remember things accurately. Right? So he's the functioning of the intelligence, how it can discriminate between what's common and what's different. And the memory. Because otherwise, how do you even remember what you're comparing? Or what are the qualities of what you're preparing? What you're remembering? So the memory is also Krishna. That's why sometimes you can remember something and sometimes you can't. It's not, you're sitting there, what is it, what is it? Sometimes you can get, you can feel it, right? In other words, that aspect of the nod you can catch. But you can't get more than that. Or sometimes you get the first letter and you can't get more than that. Right? And then you'll be sitting there and then say, oh, it's that. Okay. So we can understand we're not the one controlling memory. Krishna's memory. Right? So he's memory, he's intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Can you translate nod as sound?
Nod as?
Sound.
You would say primordial sound because it's what's unheard. You understand? Because once it's heard, then it's come to this fourth stage. Right? What you're hearing is always the fourth stage. And then the other three stages before, those are subtle. Those are heard within the heart. So those who understand the science in that, they can appreciate these things. Right? Otherwise, then not. Yeah, so that's primordial sound. It means the principle of sound. But it hasn't made sound yet. Because you can't get a sound unless there's the principle of sound. Right? Like you can't get taste unless there's the principle of taste. So first Krishna desires the taste, then he creates the tongue. Then and then he's created water, so now you can taste. If your tongue's dry, you can't taste. Does that make sense? Like if you want to eat and your mouth's dry, you drink something first. Otherwise it just gets stuck in your mouth. the taste depends upon water. Right? If something's too dry, it doesn't have taste. Right? Does that make sense?
Sometimes some devotees say that this is what my Paramatma says. Then that
this is what my Paramatma
yeah,
says.
So then that Paramatma can be good.
You have to refer that then, so you're talking within the Russian Padati here. So my Paramatma.
Devotees usually say this, you know, Paramatma inspired me. So that Paramatma.
My Paramatma. But the point is this, see, right here, first you have a problem, is because the example of how Paramatma works is that there's the sun, and then there's 100 pots. In each sun you can see, each pot you can see the sun.
Yeah.
That's Paramatma.
Yes.
So there's only one Kiradakshai Vishnu. So he's not your Paramatma. My pot. Okay, yeah, that my pot. And Kiradakshai Vishnu. The Kiradakshai Vishnu in my pot. Then, yes.
Is that
not being equated to Paramatma? But here, as Vasudev is pointing out, then this everything we're talking about is Paramatma. Because the point is everything's working that. But in here, you probably say more it would be the Brahman aspect. But the means that the existence of everything in its primordial state, that's Brahman. The qualities it has, all these different aspects. But which qualities and which activities are applied to which particular entities and situations, that's Paramatma. Why that's being done, that's Bhagavan. Because he's a person. Does that make sense?
Yes. So then we find over here that the start, middle, and the end, everything is Krishna.
Yes.
However, why is it difficult to be Krishna conscious?
Why is it difficult to be Krishna conscious?
Yeah, because it should be very easy.
He's the beginning, middle, and end, but we're kind of thinking we're also kind of the beginning, middle, and end. So maybe he's the bigger beginning, middle, and end, and we're the smaller beginning, middle, and end. You know, I mean, if no one brings up the point how Krishna is the beginning, middle, and end, then we're the beginning, middle, and end. But if they bring it up, then yes, Krishna is the big beginning, middle, and end, and we're the small beginning, middle, and end. Mm-hmm. And so when we're willing to give that up, that's when it becomes dynamic. Even though we haven't given it up, just that we're appreciating and willing to give it up and making that endeavor, then we get the results. You know. But as we become purified, then we start to see, now Krishna is the beginning, middle, and end, and I'm just an instrument in this process. You know, because the whole point is okay, it's about, I want to taste something. But the point is I can't taste unless Krishna's tasting. Right? So the principle of taste is coming from him. So I can only take part as an instrument in the overall concept of tasting. Right? That's all I can do. Okay. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the theory now. So that you can say is your Brahman level of aspect. Okay? Paramatma means, then the next thing is, what are you supposed to be tasting? But the Bhagavan level of it is going to be, does Krishna want to taste this? You know what I'm saying? You're tasting it, that's going to think that, but does he want to taste it? So therefore, tasting things that Krishna wants to taste, that's proper. Tasting things Krishna doesn't want to taste, that's not proper. Right? And tasting things to please Krishna, that's Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So the whole point is Krishna consciousness, the willingness to shift the attention from ourselves to Krishna favorably. Because we can see, we can shift the attention to Krishna, but it's not favorable for Krishna, it's favorable for us. My Paramatma. Right? That makes sense. You could always try that. You know? Less disturbances in deity worship. Take Paramatma for a walk. Well, Paramatma wants to rest now. I'm going to have to leave that. Okay, the footnote 10. You are the ordinary memory of the citta stated, situated in the jiva, jivasya, and also the memory that concentrates on the Lord, sati, Srila Jiva Goswami. Right? So that ordinary that's situated there that moves with the jiva. And then, but he's also the memory that concentrates on the Lord. So to be able to remember, since Krishna is remembrance, you can either be remembering the material or the spiritual. Right? So therefore, for pleasing Krishna on the devotional platform, then we'll remember Krishna. So it's not a matter of just memory. Right? You can boost the memory of the ability to remember things like by studying verses. That's how you expand the ability of memory. Right? That's what's given in the Krishna book. So then, but the point is to be able to remember Krishna, that comes from him. And we see those who remember Krishna, it's not that they don't have the remembrance of things that you're engaged in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? So the medium that you're remembering then is also included in the remembrance of Krishna. Now if what you're remembering doesn't, you do not need to operate that, then you can just go straight into Krishna and remembering Krishna. Now if your service is operating that which is remembered in connection with Krishna, then you operate that in connection to Krishna. Does that make sense? Lost it. Okay. You have something to eat. Now that you remember that something to eat, that's the memory. But you remember that in connection with Krishna. That is prasadam. It already includes the aspect of eating. So remembering in connection with remembering Krishna already includes remembering Krishna's creation. Right? The sahajas think, oh, we're only remembering Krishna. We don't know the rest of it. It's only Krishna, not his energies. Point is it's the energies that the pastime's going on. He's interacting with his energies. That makes the pastime, not Krishna himself. But Krishna himself is Atmarama. So that we're in the situation where we can remember Krishna. That means we have to be expanded to be, and you know, to be interact with Krishna. But if we don't, so that means then Krishna's energy. So then we're saying, oh, Krishna's in his energies, but then it's only Krishna and only these energies. You know? But no, it's Krishna and his energies, what he wants to interact with. So we see there's all kinds of things happen in his pastimes. So it always has to go back to the person. But it's through the medium of the mechanical, the secondary. So when you remember Krishna in the context of your situation, your identity, then you're going to remember both. Right? If you're a Paramahamsa where you have no identity here, then you can just remember Krishna and don't worry about it, like Sukadeva Goswami. But that means you're walking around naked and people are looking at you and laughing at you. So as long as you're cool with that, then, that's because you don't care. You're not here. You're there. Right? And the material energy will take care of the body. You know, just like the baby doesn't notice the body, but the parent takes care of it. Right? You're trying to dress, they're walking off. Right? The two don't go together. Right? It means you can walk and exercise, you can walk through so many things, but you can't walk and get dressed. Like, if people do that, it's generally considered, you know, some kind of entertainment. Right? Right? Yeah. So material nature takes care. But then you're not here, so then don't worry about it. But if you're dealing here, identifying with the situation here, then you're identifying with everything in connection with Krishna. So it automatically includes the second thing. Okay. Good?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Sanyata Gaura ki.